Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Holy cow, we're at the Reporters Roundtable tonight with some of the top stories of the week, and we have plenty. On deck, more infections recorded in D.C. when it comes to the coronavirus, and the mayor orders more masks more often. President Trump comes back with COVID-19 briefings. Kanye West, John Lewis, and a scandal with D.C.'s pro football team. All of that tonight. My guests are Nikki Mayo, president of the Baltimore Association of Black Journalists, and Charles Ellison, publisher of the BNote.com and contributing editor for TheRoot.com. Lines are open. Want to hear what you think about our top stories of the week. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Hey, you two. What's happening? How are you?
Hey, Harold. I'm fine. Thank you.
Good. Nikki, I'm going to start with you because you don't live in the district, but boy, I tell you, if you come into the district, you are going to have a mask on. We had triple-digit recordings of COVID-19 infections today. The mayor has pulled back on making a final announcement about how schools are going to open in the fall. And despite all of the precautions, COVID-19 just keeps giving. Talk to me about what's going on there.
Well, in the entire DMV region, you have to keep in mind that folks are kind of left to their, they can do what they want. But when it comes to going inside of businesses, inside of public offices and whatnot, that's where the restrictions are. And then you have these folks trying to be rebellious. So what the mayor rolled out today would be pretty much if you're going outside with a mask on, unless you're under 3 years old or doing an activity that has you moving, like exercise, that's very particular. And, of course, there's going to be some people who rebel against it, but you're going to be limited in your motions and your movements around the area. A lot of that really comes down to the user. Are you going to succumb to it, wear a mask, help prevent the spread or stop the spread? Or do you want to be someone who says, no, I can do what I want, but now you can't go into these businesses that you want to participate in? That's where we are. She was very particular, and there's fines associated with the new ordinance that she talked about. So I don't think that I would want to spend my money because I don't want to wear a mask. These masks are rather cheap considering you can be looking at a $50 to a $100 fine in some cases. So the choice is yours. You want a mask on or mask off?
One of the interesting things about that is, unlike the surges that we've seen in other parts of the country, this uptick is a little bit later coming to the district. One could argue, Charles, that the earlier steps of the shutdown helped quite a bit, but now we're seeing more cases in D.C.
Right, it helped quite a bit. In some respects, it's not a surprise that we're seeing a sudden surge in cases because you have like reopenings happening in counties and other places in the DMV region. Right, counties that are not, you know, a lot of this is determined by the politics. So depending on the politics of your zip code and where you live, that will determine exactly like what the level of cautiousness you'll see from local policymakers or local leaders, right? And so, you know, you have Washington, D.C., fairly progressive. You've got a fairly, you know, kind of standard template progressive Democratic mayor, Muriel Bowser. And so she's going to be much more cautious, and she's going to follow the public health guidelines. I mean, it's the most simple defense mechanism against coronavirus infection that you have, and it's the most effective. I mean, the science is very conclusive on this, that mask actually decreases your risk of getting coronavirus infection substantially. I mean, we're talking about 30 to 40% reductions in your chance of getting a COVID-19 infection. So, you know, we've got the science, we've got the proof, wear your mask. But, you know, definitely we're going to see this increase in cases because people are starting to leave some of their jurisdictions and venturing into other jurisdictions like the District of Columbia, which has always been it is a national city. It is the nation's capital. And then you've got young people. I mean, they were noticing an uptick in cases in the number of infection cases among younger demographics in the district. So, you know, people getting restless and being a bit careless, putting, you know, as the mayor said, lowering their guard. But this is very simple. The mask allows you to still go out in public, and it's just very simple. Just wear your mask. You wear your mask, you keep yourself protected, you keep everyone else around you protected.
You know, one of the things that was also said today by Dr. LaQuandra Nesbitt, the director of DC Health, was that they are seeing, you know, many days in a row and you know, and here or there of no deaths recorded in the district. And she alluded to the fact that many of the people who are, you know, getting sick, whether they're in the hospital or quarantining at home, they are young people. But she also said there is a lag because, you know, we've got, as of today, I think 103 new infections. There is a chance, Nikki, that unfortunately we may see some people out of that 103 recorded today get very, very sick. And we could lose some people down the road within the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and this is why contact tracing is so important, by the way, because it helps us get the trends, understand where can we see uptick or where, I'm sorry, where we are seeing upticks. And what could possibly be done to, like, do we need to start slowing up the spread in certain areas? Like, do we need to really close down certain counties and districts and stuff? So just because they don't have the numbers right now does not mean the numbers are not out there. People are, you know, if you go to the hospital, I just explained this to someone earlier, if you have to drop someone off the ER, that's it. You're dropping them off at the ER. You're not sitting in the hospital. You're not nursing them back to health. And that might deter folks from going to the hospital to seek treatment. Also, just if you don't have health insurance, let's not lie and believe that everyone's taken care of right now. There are things that will keep people from seeking treatment, from being diagnosed, and you can frankly pass away, and it could have been COVID, and we won't know for a while. So there's this weird sense of confidence that is coming with people getting restless. I agree. However, in an area so densely populated as the district with so many transients from outside of Washington, D.C. coming in for work, the best thing they did was to, like, you know, encourage teleworking, especially among federal government employees, because imagine getting it under control in D.C. and then having every day having to fight all these, you know, I say foreign, but people from outside of the district bringing their germs into the district again. The trains would be all messed up, the streetcars, taxis, Ubers, all that would get reinfected again and again. We are not paying. They're trying at the district level. They're trying to slow this up. But as humans, we are doing a bad job of paying attention and listening to the advice that we have been given. The idea that we can supersede what science is telling us is what's killing us.
Yeah. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable talking about some of the top stories of the week. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Again, 202-319-7810. One of the things that we saw this week, President Trump comes back with the coronavirus task force briefings. Yesterday was the first one since April, but conspicuously absent doctors yesterday. Charles, what did we see yesterday?
Well, what we saw was the president responding to polling numbers and being troubled by that. His advisors have gotten in his ear, his advisors not just in the White House but also on the campaign side of things. And so he's trying to have it both ways. You know, he's trying to make it seem like or give the impression, not even to the nation as a whole, but really this is just more tailored for his base, because his base, you know, they're feeling the economic hit, you know, including even white evangelicals, right? You know, they're feeling that economic hit. You know, these are very selfish, individualistic, racist voters. You know, they suddenly are feeling like those equity gaps that everyone else is feeling, and frankly, that they've created. And so, you know, he needs to, you know, the bar has been set so low as far as his presidency and his style or level of leadership that even him making like a slight adjustment in how he manages a crisis or, you know, so-called goes about management, it excites people. It excites the mainstream media, the mainstream press, you know, who suddenly says, oh, look at that shift in tone. That's not a shift in tone. That's just him crafting another okey-doke. And so, you know, he's basically saying the polls, he's reacting to that, responding, trying to look like he's somewhat leaderly to his base, you know, and so they say, see, you know, so they can have an excuse to continue voting for him because they're just, you know, let's be real, I mean, these primarily white voters are motivated by racial animus. You know, the 2016 election was primarily a thumb your nose at the black people election. And so he's trying to make it seem like, oh, you know what, hey, he's actually really a good president, when he's really not. He's the one that created the pandemic. Not having the doctors there is further appeasing the base, because they're very anti-science anyway. They didn't like people up there like Dr. Tony Fauci in the first place. So he's trying to make it seem like, oh, I'm a leader, I'm still listening to the scientific advice, but I'm not going to have my scientists or my medical practitioners, my public health experts up here, because I need to let my base know that I'm still very much effectively anti-science, anti-climate science, anti-public health, anti-anything doing with reason to get us out of this pandemic, because that's the way that they want him to be so they can turn out for him in November.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're at the Reporters Roundtable talking about some of the top stories of the week. Let's go to the phone lines. Jules calling from Germantown. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes. Hi, sir. My name is Jules.
Okay.
I'm driving Uber nighttime, but I find out I'm black. First, I'm black. But if you go to D.C. Southwest, Southeast, nighttime around 1, 2, and 3 a.m., it's so difficult to see my community when you talk to them, try to convince them to say mask is important. And when you go to hospital, and you see you go to hospital, they choose between white and black. If you are black, you get there, you are at 100% to get out. But if you are white, you are 100% to get out. But when you try to tell them, hey, you need to have the face mask, they become very, very violent. Sometimes they slap you.
What?
And you, yeah. I already have it so many times. I have a gun on my head just to ask them, can you put the face mask on before get in my car? It's a problem. And they need to talk to our community. We are black. We need to get out to say we need to have a face mask.
Mm-hmm.
First, we don't want to vote. They have to beg us to vote. Now we fight for our right for what?
Well, Jules, let me see what my guests have to say about that. You know, Nikki, you know, it's, you know, when you're using those apps for, you know, Uber or Lyft or, you know, whatever it is, there are all kinds of things that you can kind of put in. Maybe they could say, look, you know, no mask, no service. But, you know, this thing with Jules is really frightening.
No, that's what Maryland is saying. Governor Hogan got on today and said no shirt, no shoes, no mask, no service. And, yeah, you have choices. You don't want to wear a mask, fine, but you should also be denied service if the service provider is not comfortable with you being in their car, in their building, whatever, without a mask on. People need to start realizing that it is not your constitutional right to spread or potentially spread a virus.
Right.
That's a no-go. We don't even allow students into our schools without getting, like, the measles, mumps, and rubella, you know, shots. So it's kind of like, yeah, I don't understand where this my rights versus, well, what have we already established as a public health concern? This is not a joke. If people are dying from it, this has far passed the whole political football level. And that's where we are now.
Yeah.
That man should be able to deny anyone who wants to get into his car if they don't want to put a mask on.
Yeah, not to mention, it as he just suggested to us, and thank you so much, Jules, for talking to us, but, you know, it's like, do I catch the virus? Or do I get shot, you know, based on, you know, his experience and what he just, you know, shared with us?
Right.
You know, Charles, it's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. I mean, the mask, you know, once again, I just outlined the science, and the studies are very definitive, very conclusive about this. And, you know, it is one, it's the most basic layer of public health prophylaxis that's protecting you, protecting your family, your neighbors, everyone around you. The Constitution does not give you a right to defy basic public health guidelines and law to endanger other people. Because when you don't wear your mask, it's the same. You might as well just carry your firearm around because you're endangering other people, particularly if you're asymptomatic or you know you have symptoms and then you just are curmudgeon-y and you want to be different and you are, or you're mad or depressed or upset and you feel like you want to get other people sick too. This thing is not to be played with. I feel like more people who've gotten it and recovered from it need to start talking to the larger public, if they can, about how just you, even if you don't die, you're damaged goods for life. I don't think a lot of folks out there are understanding how severe this infection is and how it really messes with you. And for black folks, this is really, since the beginning of this pandemic, black folks have been the most disproportionately affected, impacted, and killed. I mean, there is genocidal level impact that's happening as a result of COVID-19 on black folks. Black folks should be the least demographic the most inclined to want to wear a mask. And so to me, I mean, let's be straight up about this. If you are black and you are not wearing a mask, it is about the most white supremacist thing you can do. You know,
whoa,
you want to talk about white supremacist? This is a white supremacist thing for you to do, because this is the, you have a white nationalist in the White House who has created this pandemic environment that is killing black people in large numbers. So cut it out. It's the same with black people. We have my partner at Trinity Research.
Hold your point, Charles.
I have to tell you these numbers.
I've got to take a really quick break, but I want our listeners to know lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable. Lots more to talk about, including Kanye West, John Lewis, and this scandal with DC's pro football team. Give us a call. We'll be back in just a moment. And don't forget, you can hear this in every discussion via podcast on WHUR.com. Stay with us. The Daily Drum continues on SiriusXM. The original Quiet Storm is on WHUR. We'll be back in a bit. This is Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation about the top stories of the week. We are at the Reporters Roundtable with Charles Ellison, publisher of TheBeNote.com and contributing editor for TheRoot.com, as well as Nikki Mayo, president of the Baltimore Association of Black Journalists. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before that quick break, Charles, you were talking about some numbers you were going to share with us. Go right ahead.
Right, right. It's real alarming. You know, so you had, you know, like had, as the caller described, you have black folks not wearing masks. That's not all black folks. I mean, you do see a lot of folks, period, starting to follow these guidelines. But these polling numbers in an election as life and death consequential as this one is, and the demographic with the most at stake is the black electorate. And the latest polling number from my partner, Trinity Research, Lincoln Park Strategies, 16% of black respondents nationally to this poll that just dropped last week saying that they will not vote. That's alarming. And, you know, So, there's this doubt that's being sowed throughout the electorate in an election like this. Is not to be played around with, whether it's the pandemic, it's this very consequential life and death election, and you have a high double-digit number of black eligible voters or potentially eligible voters saying that they won't vote. That's just insane. And that's another thing, too. That's the most white supremacist thing that you can do, is not vote. So it really is, because we've got this unabashed, unapologetic white nationalist who's in the White House. So it's like, you know, people are really going to have to start coming around and getting it together so we can save ourselves by the time we get into November.
You know, one of the things, Nikki, that did also come out today because I would imagine you did see that press conference with Maryland Governor Larry Hogan today, where he was talking about voting, for example, in Maryland, and how the primary in Maryland landed smack dab in the middle of the pandemic. He wasn't happy. A lot of folks weren't happy. And so he was saying, we're going to need all options open, whether it's mailing, early voting, and the polls opening. He even quoted President Obama today, clutch my pearls. But you know, but when you're, but like Charles was saying, every election year is the most important election year in our history. But this year, Charles, Nikki, is the most, you know, most important election year in our history, Nikki.
I mean, it does seem to keep being the theme, but I never want people to get, like, glazed over and think that, oh, that's just talk. You literally have a pandemic. You have the amount of pushback for Black Lives Matter being met with the All Lives Matter rhetoric and the Blue Lives Matter rhetoric. You have enough reasons to make sure you get a mask on and stand in a line and go vote somewhere. That's definitely evident. This year really just kind of became the big crapola show. That's the nice, you know, FCC way of saying it. It is not pretty. And I want people to understand that. It's like, I, as a younger person, do get annoyed when people say, y'all not voting. Okay. For those who are not voting, please direct that energy to them. For the rest of us, we've been policy, you know, pushing and active and getting the word out and being great, good little journalists here. But it is discerned. It is very distressing to hear that people are even thinking about not voting. You have a pandemic and you're seeing the impact of a leader who does not listen to government scientific organizations. Like, you can't really argue with science. Science does not take a political, a red or a blue. It doesn't take any sides. Science is definitive. When they're telling you that this needs to happen or else it will continue to spread, you need to listen to them. We're getting banned from other countries. So if there was ever a time to exercise one's right to vote and possibly change the way things are moving right now, 2020 is definitely that year.
I will say about that science thing that one of the most alarming things that I have ever heard was Kaylee McEnany saying last week when they were talking about opening schools, when she said, don't let science get in the way of this. My neck still hurts from the double take.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've never heard any half-thinking person say anything like that before.
To defend this hot mess, she was trying to finish it out by saying that the CDC says that younger people, particularly children, are less susceptible. I want to ask, though, for every parent listening to this, do you really want to have your kid be the guinea pig on this one? And I'm pretty sure no parent wants to have that happen.
Right. It's, you know, the worst than the pandemic is the infodemic. You know, it's just people who are distorting the public discourse and really, frankly, also doubling down on being scientifically, historically, politically illiterate. Like, people are actually comfortable in their illiteracy. And that's a big problem. That's really, you can make the argument, that's what's driving a lot of this. You know, even down to, like, when you look at the big national reckoning that we're in right now and the visceral reaction people are having to people taking down statues or trying to get the history correct. Well, that's historical illiteracy. That also speaks to the failure of public school systems, K-12, not teaching Black history or whitewashing textbooks or refusing for generations to teach people about this very rich and textured but very troubled, problematic American history. And so people don't know the kind of pain and suffering or the kinds of challenges that Black populations, Black communities have gone through, and so they don't understand it, and so they have these very, like, animus-like reactions towards Black people and can't explain it. They just do it. And so, you know, you have those kinds of, like, just insane, unreasonable kinds of comments and statements from a White House press secretary. So it's not surprising on a lot of levels.
Let me go to the phone lines. Anthony, calling from Baltimore City. Thanks for calling. Did we lose Anthony?
No.
I think we may have. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Okay. Speaking of history, and I'm going to let Nikki Mayo start with this. Nikki, please help me understand what is happening with Kanye West.
Why?
Because here's my question.
Yeah.
My rap genre. Okay, is a little bit.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
All right. Why do we care about what Kanye West has to say? Please help me with that.
Why do we care? Right now, he is the shiny object to watch. And if we could find a way of putting shades on and not paying attention to it, it would be very great. He has mental challenges. He is bipolar. He does need treatment. We did see the little comment come out from his wife, Kim Kardashian West. That said, does he not have one person around him that can keep him from going to doing rallies in South Carolina where he's, you know, desecrating the history and the legend, I'm sorry, the history and the legacy of Harriet Tubman? You know, I don't understand that. He was also talking about possibly aborting his baby during that same rally of sorts. He needs real friends, because the college dropout, that's a reference to one of Kanye's really great works. The college dropout, Kanye, has been gone for a minute. And while he wants to be a free thinker, is his phrase, or he's so creative and out there, we need him away from politics right now. As a person that covered 2016 and saw how many distractions came out targeting the Black community, mostly Black millennials, it really was discerning and got on my nerves to see the trolling. And I'm like, Kanye West needs to kind of be pushed away from politics for right now. We should not be caring what Kanye has to say about anything. When he went to the White House and had that meeting with Trump and had his cell phone exposed and showed everybody what his passcode was, that's when we should have known something was not 100% well with him. So he's not well. He's not a political anything. And while he's a shiny object of the moment, we need to focus, folks. Seriously.
To me, Charles, particularly after this weekend, but long before that, I saw this situation with Kanye West as watching a car crash in hyper slow motion.
Right.
And where, you know, and I remember, years ago when, a fellow radio personality asked me, so what do you think about what Kanye West is saying about such and so?
Right.
And I said, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Crickets.
Right.
And so I don't know whether or not, the mass media really cares, or are they just waiting for the demise of his career, or God forbid, something worse?
I mean, your response was ideal. That's the way it should be. You know, we shouldn't be paying. I mean, the whole purpose of the manic depressive rapper from Chicago is distraction, is to even sow electoral doubt. It's all part of like the continued MAGA plant strategy, you know, so like planting or inserting very weird and bizarre personalities into the electoral discussion and to get people confused, and get people fatigued. And, you know, particularly Black media, the discussions that Black media should be having right now are not about Kanye West. It's about the fact that right now nearly 30% the African-American unemployment rate right now is about nearly 30% total, and a lot of that driven by a pandemic. Those are the other factors outside of the official Bureau of Labor Statistics numbers. What are our poverty rates? What are our rates of food insecurity? How many people are close to losing their homes? But then, you know, here comes incomes, yay, and everyone's concerned about that, and then we're having this big conversation and about, like, what's going on with him. I want to know what's going on collectively with Black people, and, like, are we going to get mobilized and try to at least blow up the Death Star that's hovering above the planet right now, about to blow it up? You know, so that's what we need to get focused on. But then when you have Kanye out there, and then once again, the White House strategy, the Trump strategy right now, and also Senate Republicans, because Senate Republicans, in order for this to totally work, they have to lose their leadership in the Senate as well. But, you know, they're counting on enough doubt sowed into the electoral space that people are losing confidence in electoral process, or they're doing stupid things like writing in Kanye's name, like people did writing in Bernie's name in 2016, and look at where we are. So it's not even about gaining Black votes to that side. It's about shaving off small bunches of Black voter numbers as as best as possible, it's death by a million cuts. And so people have to be very careful of this, about the kinds of conversations that we're having in the public that we need to be concerned about. You know, we need to be concerned about where we are electorally and what our quality of life is right now and what we're going to do about it starting in November.
There you go. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Let us move to the difficult but life well lived story of John Lewis, congressman from Georgia. He passed away Friday from complications of pancreatic cancer, 80 years old. That L should also stand for legend. Just an incredible, incredible man. What does his passing, Nikki, mean to America, and more specifically, Black America?
It's amazing to see someone who was so pivotal in the civil rights movement that when you reference Bloody Sunday, that is the first sad name, sadly the first name you think of, but knowing that he was one of the people who organized and led that. And I mean, that image of him being attacked will always be a part of our lives. Like, he went from that position to an elected position when he was fighting for voter rights and he is an elected official. If that is not the A to the B right there in a straight line showing progress, I don't know what else can be. I'm a historian. I live for the Black history just because that's, frankly, that's one of my degrees. He is the epitome of it. And at times you kind of got into the uncle and auntie's feel with him because, I mean, he's a sage wisdom person. But he loved young people on top of that, too. He remembers being a young person, moving and leading things. So he was always championing new people, new young blood, like the squad, when they came into Congress. He was like one of their biggest advocates for a while. And when it comes to who mobilizes you, who motivates you, John Lewis is that person. You just saw him at like a Comic-Con where he dressed up as himself, wearing the trench coat and everything, and told kids about, you know, well, I was on the Edmund Pettus Bridge, and told him his story with his comic book, I'm sorry, it's a graphic novel, with his graphic novel right there. So how cool is that, that he always was trying to, like, help the next generation to just be motivated to make change, you know, to get in that good trouble, as he always said.
You know, one of the things you just said to me that really struck me, yes, and I think you're right, to, you know, a certain generation, they may see, they may have seen John Lewis as not a senior statesman, but somebody who was no longer relevant, auntie, uncle, I get that. But he was, if for no other reason other than he kept getting reelected to Congress and he had a vote and a voice.
Yeah.
And you can't be more relevant than having a vote and a voice than someone such as John Lewis.
When he was called, you know, the conscience of the Congress.
Absolutely.
Like, he's the conscience.
Absolutely. And you know, boycotting the inauguration of President Trump, and, you know, really kind of sticking to his guns, being unwavering in, you know, the process of, you know, that civil rights, you know, marching, even, you know, even through the halls of Congress, is still an extremely real thing. And that's the thing, Nikki, that you were talking about earlier today, about people who do not vote. If you can't vote, or if you choose not to vote, then you are no longer relevant.
Right.
No vote, no voice, period.
Yeah.
And keep in mind, with John Lewis and with C.T. Vivian, both of those, they represented the faith community while protesting. We have video of both of those men being assaulted.
Hmm. Yes.
In the name of the civil rights movement.
C.T. Vivian, like, laid to rest today in Atlanta. Hmm. Yes.
Like,
yeah. Your thoughts, Charles, about John Lewis?
You know, we all miss John Lewis. It's hard not to think or not to imagine how much intestinal fortitude it took on the part of John Lewis, you know, to try to remain as optimistic as he could, as I remember him being, you know, and just in the few interactions that I had with him personally. But yet knowing that certain pillars, certain foundations of democracy, and those foundations that he fought so vigorously for, that he, like, literally took blows to the head for, falling apart around him. And so, you know, we're having this conversation about, you know, how much America is honoring John Lewis. America collectively is not honoring John Lewis. It's doing a very poor job of doing that right now as we speak. You know, it's Donald Trump is not an isolated incident. Donald Trump is not alone. For example, Senate Republicans in leadership who are going to refuse to pass a strengthened voting rights advancement bill that's going to come out of the House and is going to sit on the Senate Majority Leader's desk. We know that. And it will never pass through the current Senate as it's structured, and it will never be signed by the current president. That's clearly dishonoring John Lewis. It was nauseating to watch over a whole weekend folks who spent an entire lifetime, who built careers, spent millions to perhaps billions of dollars working to dismantle voting rights, and then they're spewing out condolences on social media for John Lewis. It's like, I don't want to hear it. You know, like, don't do it. We see you already. Like, you've spent and you've built a career out of taking rights away from people, out of destroying, obliterating voting rights, and here you're giving these fake, obligatory condolences to John Lewis and his memory. We don't want to see it. So, you know, it's very saddening. And then on the eve of his death, you have the Supreme Court making this horrific decision, snatching away the voting rights of the formerly incarcerated in Florida, a decision that voters in Florida made. And then Republicans in Florida took it upon themselves to reverse. You know, so that was happening on the night before John Lewis's death, the Supreme Court dishonoring. So it's, we miss him. We miss, like, that inspiration, that voice that he always was. But then you have so many folks in America, you know, I'm not exactly sure, like, how do you define honoring John Lewis? Because right now America is not doing it.
And to that point, Stacey Abrams, the Democratic candidate for governor last go around who lost, we spoke to her. There you go. Last week, and you know, she is still talking about the realities of voter suppression, not just in her state, but across the country. We've begun to see a rise in the right-wing rhetoric of people, including the president, trying to discount absentee and mail-in voting when United States military, our honored United States military, has been voting via absentee, not for years, but for decades. For decades and decades. It doesn't get any more American than that.
Right.
And so when we see the subversion, again, of voting rights, not just for people of color.
Right.
But if you're going to discount absentee voting for members of the military of all colors, you know, what's going on here, Charles?
Yeah, we saw some real good signs for a vote by mail in these last primaries. You know, particularly when we look at what happened on June 2nd, you had the Maryland, D.C., Pennsylvania primaries, and even in places like Philly, for example, my hometown, you had voter participation actually increase in a time of pandemic and protest, as they were all converging at the exact same time. There were signs that it works, and people were able to put this together in just a matter of weeks. And when you look at the states that have universal vote by mail, places like Colorado, Washington, Oregon, for example, it took them like 10 years to put that all into place. Here's folks are putting that together in a matter of weeks. Clearly, certain forces, certain sinister forces are afraid of that. They don't want it to work. you know, they're all about, like, not giving folks that kind of franchise, that kind of agency, and just empowerment. You know, when you're able to flex muscle collectively like that in large numbers. And so that's the last point here, is that that's why it's important for everyone, not just to be registered, but for everyone to turn up. The voter suppression games will be played, don't get me wrong, on November, but two things have to happen. One, we can't think of this in terms of election day. We need to think of this in terms of election month. Everything needs, the switch needs to be flipped on starting in October. People need to do their vote by mail. There shouldn't be this mad rush to the polls on November 3rd. And then secondly and finally, we need to overwhelm that voter suppression, superiority by numbers. That's what's going to overwhelm that voter suppression that is going to take place. We already see signs of it. That's why it's important for every last eligible voter to be out there voting. Some will get lost. But then, you know, for every one vote lost, if everyone's turning out, there's like 200 votes that come right behind it that get counted. And then we can win this thing.
Mm-hmm. Before I shut down for the evening, Nikki, we've got to talk about the burgundy and gold, the Washington football team, the nameless team. This issue, the Washington Post reporting that some 15 women working in the front office in various and sundry positions are accusing now fired or retired staff of sexual harassment and inappropriate behavior. The hits just keep coming, and I'm not talking about on the defensive line. Can I say the offensive line for the team? What's going on with the team there?
I mean, the reality of it is that sexual harassment has been around since, I don't know, forever. For all, I've been a woman all my life. It's been a part of my life the entire time.
All your life.
And all my life.
All of your life. Since before I met you. Yes.
Thank you. So when it comes to, like, I don't ever want to make light of any woman's situation. And with this, it's just more indicative of women being empowered to speak out about the oppression in which they're meeting in the workplace. Because this ain't new. And I'm glad they're speaking out and they're telling their story. And I hope they get some serious lawsuit money out of this, because it's really painful and annoying to be a professional that has to include as part of your job description somebody either playfully so-called hitting on you or touching or groping or harassing. All of these things being part of your job description should be null and void as of forever. But since it isn't, and welcome to 2020 when women finally have a voice to really speak out about this type of workplace oppression. That is an old boys club over there, and they are so getting the reckoning right now, and I am totally here for it.
There you go. Charles, your thoughts about it?
It's not my team. I really feel sorry for Washington.
Not my team, by the way.
I feel sorry for Washington Redskins fans. I say this as a proud lifetime Philadelphia Eagles fan. So, you know, but to Nikki's point, absolutely. I mean, this is very welcome. And so there was a time where women couldn't come out like this, right, and talk about that kind of oppression and microaggressions that are taking place in the workplace. So it's welcome to be able to expose that and to make, you know, no workplace, no workspace should be hostile for anyone, least of all, like, our mothers, our sisters, our aunties, right, and our grandmothers. And so, you know, we need to think of it on that level. And so it's good to see that that comes out. And so, you know, hopefully they'll be able to move forward and make the changes that need to happen.
One of the things I'm kind of surprised at, and who knows what may happen tomorrow or next week, Washington's team isn't the only pro football team with women working in the front office.
Right.
And so I'm just surprised that we have not seen within this first week of the story coming out a groundswell of women speaking up and saying it's not just happening with the burgundy and gold, it's happening with the Philadelphia Eagles,
Charles, or the
Dallas Cowboys, or the San Diego, or, well, they're not in San Diego, I don't even know, or whoever
it
is.
Keep in mind, when you make those moves, you need to be lawyered up.
Yes, right.
You do.
Don't
just come and say, oh, yeah, me too. No, you come me too with a straight-up Gloria Allred or something like that. So
There was some speculation that the Washington Post, that it wasn't accidental that this showed up in the Washington Post, or was the Washington Post to expose this, which is owned by Jeff Bezos.
Mm-hmm.
And there has been some speculation that Jeff Bezos might be eyeing an acquisition of the Washington Redskins. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's that. So I'm just saying that speculation is out there.
Well, as the richest man in the world, he could probably just reach in his pocket and pay for the team, considering the way the prices for those tickets were last
Charles,
year.
You didn't have to call them a dead skin.
Yeah, I know.
No, and I wish I like the XFL.
You didn't have to call them that. This is a Washington show.
You know what? I like the D.C. Defenders, the XFL.
I did, too.
I was actually kind of a fan for the D.C. Defenders. I like that. No,
they did very, very well until COVID came in and just got rid of
everything.
We got to get through it. Everybody, please, wear a mask. Wear a mask. Take care of yourself and the people that you love, even your neighbors and on the bus and everywhere else. Wear a mask. Look, I want to thank both of you, Nikki Mayo, Charles Ellison. Always good to talk to you. I appreciate it.
Same here, Harold. Take care, Nikki.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
That is the Daily Drum for this Wednesday, July 22nd. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.